Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This morning, we'd like to welcome Gary Kaunonen. He is the author of a book called Flames of Discontent, The History of the 1916 Minnesota Iron Ore Strike. And Gary, one of the first things I guess I'd like to ask you this morning is, this happened almost 100 years ago, and yet the history of, obviously, the Iron Range and the people who worked there and the political power that they eventually came to possess is really a fascinating story. And in essence, it's kind of a microcosm, I guess, of America altogether. You could see it that way.
And that's an interesting point you bring about, because one of the big facets of the book is that history is context. And so, you know, something brought us to the point where we are at today. And so the 1916 strike book really kind of is one of those parts of where or how we got to where we are today in regards to labor relations and their significant context, and the book covers that context.
One of the things that also fascinated me, I guess, was the idea that immigrants, and there's a lot of conversation about immigrants and who are immigrants and how are they regarded in today's society. Immigrants were the ones that brought about this strike, the miner strike that then had all of these repercussions. And so these were people who could have felt powerless, but instead felt very empowered to make some big changes. Can you talk just a little bit about the difference, perhaps, between the immigrants of 100 years ago in northern Minnesota and the conversation, maybe some of the conversations that we're having about immigrants now?
Yeah, that's a great point. And immigrants really shaped the face of the Iron Range in 1916. And they absolutely had no voice. There were just thousands upon thousands of immigrants that were brought in to work on the Iron Range from Finland, Southeastern Europe, Italy, and they couldn't vote, remember? And so the only way they had to express themselves was by joining unions or ethnic, cultural, and fraternal organizations. And so while this idea of what an immigrant is kind of shifting, because certainly most of the immigrants then were from Europe, whereas today we think of immigrants often as people from perhaps Mexico or Central America or even Africa, folks seeking asylum. While the faces and the names of the immigrants have changed and where they come from has changed, that idea of being an immigrant and perhaps feeling voiceless in America, that hasn't changed. All the debate that surrounds immigration today is essentially, and this is that context part again, is essentially the same debate that they were having in 1916. We want people to come here and work, but we don't want to give them the same rights or the same voice as all the rest of the workers or the folks in America have. So while the immigrants have changed over time where they come from, that immigrant experience hasn't changed within the last 100 years.
Well, and this was interesting, too, because instead of people having a vague suspicion that somebody might be coming to take, you know, their job, these were people that were being brought here to work, to take jobs, not necessarily from the people who were already working, but they were brought here specifically to do work. And now, as you mentioned, we've got immigrants that are fleeing and seeking asylum, and yet that would engender more compassion in us, and it kind of doesn't in some cases.
Yes, and that idea of immigrants fleeing is kind of similar as well. Most of the immigrants that were coming 100 years ago were coming from places that were ruled by monarchy or despots, or, you know, in Finland, Finland was, in 1916, Finland was a part of the Russian Empire. In Southeast Europe, the Slavic immigrants, those folks were in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, where they were second-class citizens. And that's one of the truly kind of uplifting things within the book, is that sometimes those immigrants, like if you take the case of Austrian, so-called Austrian or Southeastern European immigrants and Finns, they were very bitter rivals early on, because in 1907, Finns and Italians went on strike on the range, in a big strike on the Mesaba Range, and Austro-Hungarians, or those Southeastern Slavic people, were brought in to break the strike. They were scabs. But by the 1916 strike, which is covered primarily in the book, those two groups had kind of come together. So within 10 years, you saw this kind of really interesting ethnic solidarity that came about because of working conditions, where two groups that were kind of bitterly opposed to one another recognized the conditions of their labor and living conditions and fought together to try and change their lives for the better.
Gary, tell us a little bit about this. Let's go back to this miners' strike in 1916, and tell us a little bit about the context of this particular event that we can learn from today.
Great question. And the kind of the main point of the book is that, and it gets covered early in the book, is that history is a human right. And the book is attempting to give workers 100 years ago a voice today. Because oftentimes history is written by the quote-unquote winners, right? That's kind of one of the quotes that we often hear. And groups that were marginalized or disenfranchised, like immigrants, like working-class folks that were kind of doing the difficult jobs, we don't hear a lot about them. And the book treats history as a human right. And kind of on the larger scale, the United Nations lists 33 universal human rights, and having a history isn't one of them. And the book argues that having this history of immigrants, of working class folks, that should be a universal human right. And so that kind of provides the context for looking at this strike 100 years ago. And if you carry that forward to today, oftentimes we aren't going to get the full story of the immigrant experience, or and especially the working class experience in America today, and that we have to dig a little deeper, because those folks in the past and today have the right to have their history preserved and told.
With all of the wonderful options that we have now. I mean, everything from, and of course this has been around for a while, but everything from the cassette recorder that you could bring to record grandma and grandpa's stories, to the apps that you can use on your phone to record some of this history. Do you feel as though people need to be thinking about telling these stories in their everyday lives, not just necessarily writers or historians or journalists, but everybody should be thinking about this a little bit?
Always. And you know, I'm a labor historian, so you know, I'm kind of preaching from the pulpit here a little bit, but history is so important, from the level of family history and genealogy to capturing those stories that don't get told. And I've done oral histories with quite a few people, and oftentimes you know, people that come from working class or immigrant backgrounds. And oftentimes one of the most difficult things is trying to convince them that their history is important. right? Because we'll sit down at the table, and one of the first questions that I'll get in doing the interview is, why is this important? Why am I important? You don't want to hear my story. I didn't do anything. I went to work for 25, 30 years working in a pit of a mine. Why would you want to hear about what I'm doing? Or I worked, raising a family for 25 years. Why would you want to hear my story? Those stories are important because they provide the backbone of America. And oftentimes, one of the most difficult aspects of doing oral history, even if you're doing an interview with your grandpa, is trying to convince them that their story is important, because I almost guarantee somewhere in their history, there's going to be some really interesting things that occurred to them.
Well, Gary, you've not only given us a wonderful glimpse into the past, but you've perhaps given us some tools, some inspiration, maybe lighted a little bit of a spark to encourage us to maybe do a little of that digging on our own. Thank you so very much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me. And just quickly, I'd like to thank a couple of folks there in Duluth. I did some of the research at the UMD Historical Archives in Northeast Minnesota Historical Collections, and Pat Moss and Moggs David were really helpful in the research. So UMD was certainly part of the book and the research process, and Duluth in general as well.
Well, Gary, that's wonderful. As a matter of fact, we'll get a link set up to those UMD Historical Archives, so if folks want to do a little digging on their own, it'll be easy for them to find. And thanks again so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
The author of Flames of Discontent, Gary Kounenen, joined us this morning. Flames of Discontent, the 1916 Minnesota Iron Ore Strike. Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.